Well, this is Karen Testerman with We Hold These Truths. And in our studio, we have our free market warrior, Lauren Perfect. Spivak. And Lauren, before we went to break, you were talking about choice, and I just heard our little ad there. It was sort of Common Core, wonderful Common Core. At some point, I'm going to tear that one apart as well. It's sort of a rebranding of outcome-based education, which is a government telling you what the curriculum should be. And really, as you pointed out just before we went to break, the best thing for education is freedom of choice for the parents to choose which method of education they want to use with their child.
Well, yeah, at the risk of giving away another of the great secrets of what economics is all about, it's all about the fact that the human brain is only so big. And none of us, whether we're the president of the United States or anywhere on down the line, have the mental capacity to deal with the tremendous variety of factors involved in any number of decisions. One of the key reasons, at least, why socialism doesn't work is that it's predicated on the idea that some individual, some leader, some group of some council somewhere decides what everybody wants, what everybody needs, how many baseball bats, how many tennis rackets, how many fly swatters, how many, you know, peanut butter sandwiches, you know, that everybody in the country is going to need, and that we're going to run production like that. And it's impossible, because the fact is we live in an incredibly complex world, and decisions are best made when we do them on the individual level, not on the mass level. I know my children. I know when they're doing well, when they're doing poorly. I know their individual needs and strengths and weaknesses. If I go into the free market and look for the right school for my children, I suspect that I might very well not even have the same school, you know, for each of the children, because they're different. And I can see whether it's working, whether it's not, in a way that the government can't do that. One of the analogies I like to make is with the restaurant industry, because restaurants are probably one of the least regulated industries in our society. There's some health codes and some zoning laws, but by and large, once you've got a restaurant, you can serve any kind of food you want. You can hire whatever kind of staff and waitresses or waiters. You can charge whatever prices you want. You can there's different systems. There's buffets. There's restaurants where you go up to the counter and walk down with your tray. There's restaurants where they bring it to you. There's a tremendous range of restaurants. And the result is, all over this country, it's one of the unsung stories. Capitalism is full of unsung stories because people just take this for granted. Over the last 50 years, the restaurant industry in America has been an amazing success story. There is incredible variety from a quick greasy burger to five-star cuisine and everywhere in between. There's restaurants to take your families to, restaurants to take a date to, restaurants to take, you know, your business associates to, all different quality and styles and tastes. There's restaurants for vegetarians and restaurants for Mexican food, anything you want. And it's all there. It's completely free market. If they don't, and the prices, by the way, have gone down and down and down. Okay. Poor people used to not go to restaurants. It was only for rich people. Now almost everyone goes to restaurants. Poor people, rich people, and there's different ones with different tastes. And it's incredibly good and efficient and effective, and the price keeps getting cheaper. And it's because you have a complete free market where people make their own decisions. If the restaurant is not doing a good job, you don't go back again.
Yeah.
And they go out of business. Restaurants, it's a tough industry, which is good for us consumers, because if the restaurant does not keep up, and I think everyone knows a restaurant, wherever you live, you know a restaurant that used to be really good. And then they just lost it. It wasn't so good anymore. And 6 months after that, they were gone.
Right.
Because they weren't doing it. And now there's a new restaurant there with a new guy who's trying to keep the high quality up. And that's what we want. And it's what we could have in schools. Instead, we have an enormous government bureaucracy that spends $13,000 per child Okay,
that's a
nationwide average. So 25 kids in the class, that's like $350,000. Okay, the teacher gets maybe $50,000. Where'd the other $300,000 go? Nobody knows.
Well, and the fascinating thing is that when you come up with those facts and figures, in some cases they are not including the transportation costs. They're not including the mortgage on the building, and those are separate costs.
It doesn't include capital costs. So that's correct.
Yeah, and it's sort of like our CPI index, which our consumer price index. It's interesting that gas prices have gone up, but the consumer price index hasn't gone up. You know, it's because we're not including food and gas in the calculation. We used to include it, but no longer are we including it. So we're getting false numbers from our government. And I think it's interesting. You brought up sequestration a little bit ago, and it was funny because on Red State, there was this article yesterday. It said that Barack Obama spoke out about the pending sequestration flanked by first responders and others. And what did he not mention was that sequestration was his idea, and that the emergency responders, like the ones here today, he said, their ability to help communities respond to and recover from disasters will be degraded. But yet it was his idea. Border Patrol agents will see their hours reduced. So then why did he propose sequestration? FBI agents will be furloughed. So, Mr. President, if it's so bad, why did you propose the idea? And this article continues down that stream. Is sequestration going to happen?
Ah, that's the question. I can predict some economic consequences. It's hard to predict political happenings. What bothers me more than the fact that the president is being less than honest, I don't get that bothered by it. You know, it's kind of like getting mad at a shark, you know, for eating people. You know, that's what sharks do. And I don't mean, you know, just this president. Probably most presidents tend to spin the truth, and this president is notoriously less than straightforward. And moreover, he has a very, very clear agenda. I've long since gotten over getting mad at that. We just need to deal with that as reality. And what bothers me more is not that sequestration was his idea and that he's lying about it. What bothers me more is that the Republicans didn't even figure that out until last night. As far as I can gather, it was somewhere around 10 o'clock last night that everyone figured out that what Obama's been saying for the last 2 weeks is nonsense. The Republicans are dead in the water. It's like they've got no principles and they don't even have any tactics. You know, the most obvious things in the world, I believe that Boehner finally suggested some more plausible things you could cut, like conferences where we spend millions of dollars having federal employees sit around in hot tubs drinking champagne, you know, for a weekend, you know, in Las Vegas. That things like that could be cut, and that would save all the money. I suggested you could get rid of several departments, like energy and education and labor and commerce,
which are all, by the way, unconstitutional.
But of course. Now, I got a quick question for you, though. What do you think would be more economically efficient for the country? Which would be better for the country's economy? Getting rid of silly stuff like people going to federal workers going to conferences and drinking champagne out of hot tubs, or getting rid of things like the Department of Energy, the Department of Education, the Department of Labor? And the answer is, we actually will be richer getting rid of the Department of Energy and the Department of Labor, because the hot tubs in Las Vegas are simply a waste. That's like flushing money down the toilet. It's like throwing money into the river. Whereas things like education, energy, and those other departments, which are, you correctly say, are unconstitutional, but they actually make us poorer. If we would throw that money into the river as opposed to spending it on the Department of Education, et cetera, we'd actually be better off. But even if we lost the money, simply by not having them do the work that they're doing. So the issue, I have no idea whether it's going to happen or not. The issue is, first of all, it's absolutely nothing. Okay, it doesn't even reduce the budget. It just it doesn't grow quite as much as they wanted it to grow. And the second point is that if we're going to seriously deal with this issue, and at some point we're going to have to seriously deal with this issue, like that credit card you were suggesting not paying, you know, they're going to find you. Okay, the credit card is going to show up and find the United States government, and we're going to have to deal with it probably sooner rather than later. And when that happens, we need to deal. I'm losing my train of thought. Look at the reality of how to have government do what it's supposed to do efficiently, and get away from this game, which we're going to be hearing so much more of, wherein they come up with the least plausible way to cut money. So the federal government is looking for a 2% reduction, not from last year, but a 2% less increase. Okay, right. And so they're, oh my gosh, we'll have to get rid of the FBI. We'll have to fire all the Marines. We'll have to, you know, the most obvious things. Jerry Brown, who is governor of California, was doing this a year or two ago. He was trying to get people to vote for a tax increase, and he said, either we raise taxes, or we're going to have to release all the rapists and murderers and child molesters from the prisons. Because apparently he couldn't think of any other way. There's no other way the state of California could possibly save money. They don't waste a single penny. And the only thing you can cut is letting all the murderers out. Okay? And apparently the people of California believed him. And so they voted for the tax increase.
Well, that's generally the way that the game is played, so to speak. I mean, when you want to cut a school budget, or you want to increase the taxes going to a local school, for example, one of the things you do is you threaten to cut the football team, because it's an emotional issue.
Sure.
That will get people involved, because there's all these kids that play extracurricular sports. How can you cut the sports programs? We need those. That's so much benefit to us. And in reality, other countries, if you had the sports program, it's out of your pocket, and you choose as a parent to allow your child to do this, and it's outside of the school system. It doesn't surprise me that they turn around in California and turn around and say, you know, if we're going to have to let all of these murderers and rapists go, that's to stir the emotion in the people, and that's what we need to get away from, is really looking at it.
And it's a sign that you're fundamentally not serious. You're looking at this purely as a propaganda issue,
right,
to prevent problems. It's not working toward a solution, it's to prevent a solution. If they made you the new chairman of General Motors, okay, so you're in charge of General Motors Corporation, and they said, listen, we got to cut 2% of expenditures.
Right.
Would you leave steering wheels out of all the cars to cut the 2%?
Right, exactly.
I don't think so. If you're going to tell me that there is a, I don't believe there's a company in America that couldn't cut 2% if it had to without damaging their product.
Well, and that brings us back to the fact too that many times when we're talking about these budgets, we're talking about their wish list. We're not talking about it like you and I sitting down at our table in the kitchen table and trying to balance everything. We're not looking at it and saying, this is how much money we had last year. We've got to figure out, we're not going to have that much this year. We're going to have a 2% less than we had last year. We've got to figure out where we're going to take it out. No, what the government is doing is it's saying, we put this wish list out there. It was going to increase government, last year's budget by 10%, but now they want us to cut it by 2%, and doggone it, we're not going to get the whole 10%. We're going to be cut 2%. And we're looking at it from a different, it's not off of what we actually have as necessities. It's off of what we wanted as a wish list.
Sure. Well, that's Thomas Sowell, to go back to my hero, says the first rule of economics is that there's never enough of anything to completely satisfy everybody. And that's the first rule of economics. And the first rule of politics is to ignore the first rule of economics.
Yeah. No, that's very true too, isn't it? Now, so Lauren, how does somebody get in touch with you if they want to know more about your seminars?
Well, let's see. I have a website which is mostly about my book, but you can contact me through it. It's ObamaParody.com. I'll give out my email if you want. It's my name, Lauren Spivak, LORENSP as in Peter, IV as in Victor, ACK at gmail.com.
Well, thank you very much for coming in, Lauren. This has been a very stimulating talk. According to the media reports, however, it appears that we are on the verge of an economic collapse. And they're not even talking about our out-of-control debt. Rather, terror is being rained on us because of spending cuts on March 1st, the sequester. The budget this year is $3.7 trillion, and we are not being told that not spending a mere $85 billion of that will absolutely destroy us. That's like saying we as a family want to spend $37,000 this year. And if we can't spend $850 of it, we won't be able to survive. Well, Rush Limbaugh was right about this crisis. Quote, "What's happening here, folks, is that we are being played for fools and being suckered. Suckered into supporting the never-ending expansion of government, the wholesale destruction of the private economy. Everybody who joins in this debate under the premise that Obama puts forth, as well as debating the politics of this nonsense, is just being used to cover up what's actually going on. Now, what's going on is no great conspiracy. It's no mystery. We're simply spending much more money than we have. The government is getting inexorably larger. It's less and less efficient at accomplishing anything. We're creating more and more dependence. We're robbing people of their dignity and humanity and of their opportunity to realize their dreams as they turn their lives over to the government. It's like a never-ending cycle. The government makes the private sector smaller. There are fewer jobs opportunities. There is less money in the private sector, less opportunity to accrue wealth. Income taxes and others threaten to go higher. They do go higher. It all adds up to the government growing, the private sector shrinking, freedom being lost ever so slowly, and nobody ever talks about stopping this. Well said, Rush. Until next week, this is Karen Testerman with We Hold These Truths on New Hampshire's Family Radio, WLMW 90.7 FM.